Hello and welcome to the Avanti Entrepreneur Show. I am Dave Amano, your host, and we're here to help achievers and business owners and leaders move forward so that they can reach their potential. And I do this by interviewing Rochester's business movers and shakers. Today I have on the show, I'll say the epitome of a business mover and shaker, Carlos Carvalhada. Carlos, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Dave. Nice to be here.
Really appreciate you being here. I know you're a busy guy. And I have to say, if somebody has lived in Rochester their whole life and hasn't heard of you, then they're living in the caves over by Lake Ontario. So you have, in one way, in many different forms, have been very ingrained in Rochester and really New York State in many ways, too. So thank you for all that you've done. And doing a little research for this show, the first article that came up was called The Non-Retiring Carlos Carvalhada, which I think is fantastic, right? And I hear you. I can't picture myself retiring either. We've talked about that. But Carlos, I have your bio, but certainly would probably take a good half hour to read. So I'm going to do a quick overview, and then the first thing I want to do is talk about your journey. Your journey. As a person, a business person here in Rochester so far. I first remember you growing up in Rochester from Central Trust. I remember seeing your face, your nice, handsome face on many commercials, and you were the president, CEO, and certainly the face of the bank. And then really getting involved in politics, but without having to be elected, right? You were very involved economic development, city of Rochester, deputy mayor, by some circumstances that were kind of unforeseen. You became acting mayor of Rochester for a while. And so what a great journey that's still going on. So if you don't mind, take us back to how it all got started. I think it's a great story.
Well, of course, I have to talk about my mother and dad as getting started.
We have to thank them.
Right?
Yeah.
They were immigrants to this country.
From where?
My mother was born in Lima, Peru.
Oh, wow.
My dad was born in Spain.
Okay,
and I happened to be born in Brooklyn, New York.
All right.
Now, how they got together is beyond my imagination.
What a great combination. I mean, I wonder how many, combos of those that there are,
Well, it's interesting because they came here not knowing the language and not with much family here. Mm-hmm. And yet, then my aunt came, and during the Depression, my aunt and my mother used to run a beauty parlor in New York City.
Yeah.
Yes, and were reasonably successful at it. Unfortunately, the two macho Spaniards that they were married to didn't particularly like that.
Right.
So they decided to move to Buffalo, where my dad at least worked for Bethlehem Steel Plant as a millwright on the ore docks. Hard work. And, of course, those were the days, David, when nobody liked anybody. The Germans didn't like the Irish didn't like the Polish didn't like the Spaniard, and on and on and on and on.
The Italians didn't like the Irish,
So, it was an interesting environment. I've gotten somewhat interested in education over the years, and we often talk about poverty as a result of what's happening. And many of my friends talk about, all these people have to do is just work a little harder and they'll be successful, or study a little more. And the interesting thing, at least from my perspective, is that when I grew up, we were poor. We lived in the neighborhood where everybody was poor. Yet everybody seemed to be working hard, and my mother and dad's devotion was to their sons and had to make sure we got educated and all that kind of thing. But we were poor. I didn't really know how much or realize how much until I grew up.
But you were happy.
You got
your meals, your clothes,
right?
You were happy, right?
My one big fear was my mother was going to get after me for doing something wrong.
Right. Yeah. Fear's a good motivator.
But when you look at the poverty today, much different than when I was poor. I mean, this is poverty that has extended itself through generations.
Broken family.
Yes, oh, all kinds of things. And as a result, the solution has become very, very difficult to figure what is it. A number of groups in the community are working at that and working hard at it. But if any of your audience out there is interested in what do I do, what can I do? Well, David, you could start, perhaps you could start a movement. It's interesting, I have some friends that talk to me about this all the time, and I tell them that, well, you really only have to do one thing. If you do one thing, you can get started in helping solve this in the long term. And they ask, what is that? I said, well, you can drive, right? Yes. Have you got four friends that will work with you? Probably. Well, the one thing you have to do, and you can do this, is go to the district and adopt a family or a single mom or a single dad or a grandmother who's taking care of the children and help them make sure that their children go to school every day. So you pick them up and you take them to school. And the reason you need five people is so that one doesn't create an overburden for themselves. Two, you pick them up at the end of school day and bring them home. Make sure they come home when they're supposed to. It's all you five have to do. You do that, and the rest will take care of itself.
One
because
simple thing, yeah.
What will happen is they'll get to know this little girl or little boy, and all of a sudden they meet the family. All of a sudden they say, gee, maybe we can take him to the ball game on Saturday. Maybe. And all of a sudden they create a relationship, and they become a asset, even though the family may not realize it, really try to engage that family in how do you remove yourself from this position of poverty. In the long term, the only way that the family will make that happen is if somebody breaks the barrier of not being educated in the true sense of the word. I'm not talking about graduating and having a piece of paper that says I did that. I'm talking about really getting educated.
Great. I'm here with Carlos Carbalata. In case you don't know him, I don't know how to describe you, Carlos. You have so many things, so many wonderful accomplishments. Your most recent one was deputy mayor. What was your title with economic development? Was it just director of economic development?
No, it was Commissioner of Neighborhood and Business Development.
Okay, great. So, Carlos, we're gonna take a quick break, and we'll be right back. Okay, we are back. I am Dave Mamano with the Avanti Entrepreneur Show. Avanti means move forward in Italian, and that's what we're here to do. I have a great guest today that continues to move forward and can help us, you, me, move forward. Carlos Carbalata. Been involved in many different things throughout the years, Board of Regents, Central Trust Bank, M&T Bank, Deputy Mayor, was the Acting Mayor, Economic Development, so many great things. So glad that you ended up in Rochester from Brooklyn and then I believe Buffalo, right? Great things about, you talked about what someone can do, just one act, to help solve this poverty problem, and you know, picking up a kid for school, bringing him or her to school, and then back, and those conversations you have in a car can be incredibly pivoting. One conversation can change a life, and I felt that firsthand when I first got out of college. I became a compeer. I remember Bernice Scoville,
sure,
right?
Sure.
And so I got my little brother, you know, city kid, really nice boy. And, you know, once again, just ended up being born in a cycle of poverty, I would take him out once a week. We'd go, you know, bowling, bike riding, whatever. And he just was happy to spend time with me. And he was about 12 years old, and he was really smart. And we went for a walk in the park, and he was naming all the birds. And I didn't know any of the birds, you know. I'm like, what? I go, Robert, you're really smart. And I meant it. He was like, what? I go, yeah, Robert, you're actually really smart. Good for you. I go, you know, you know you got to go to college, right? And he had never heard like that before. You know, and he looked at me. He was like, I thought I was kidding. He's like, what? You know, who, me? Almost like a little innocent Richie Cunningham. Like, oh, shucks. Who, me? College? And I was like, Robert, totally. You have the brain. You totally can go to college. And that became kind of the rhythm of our conversations about him going to college. He had never been talked about that. It wasn't an option. Wasn't even a thought. Nobody in his family had ever gone to college. So, you know, 2 or 3 years later, now he's in high school, and it's really not cool to have a big brother anymore. And that happens, the Compeer program. Mm-hmm. And so we kind of drifted away, and I would reach out. But, you know, his reaching back to me became less and less, which was fine. You know, I was like, all right, the bird has flown mm-hmm. a little way, you know. And but years later, he called me, and at my office, he, you know, looked me up. And, hey, Mr. David, this is Robert. Remember me? I'm like, of course. And he goes, I'm calling you from FLCC. I'm going to college. And it's all because of you and what you said. And I started to cry.
Yeah, well, that's great. No, that's wonderful. Those are great stories.
And just that little, you know, that little thing. I want to cry now. I mean, just that little thing of me putting that idea in his head and creating the vision in his mind of who he could be. And I don't know if he would have got that without somebody could just be a mentor to him and a friend to him and give him that idea and increase the size of his fish tank, if you will.
Yeah. Well, just think, David, if we could get 10,000 people to do what you did, mm-hmm. and that act of encouragement, and you can be better than you are, or yeah. you think you can be. Those little things can be done every single day,
yeah,
to so many. And you know, I love to tell the story about Abraham Lincoln, who went to hear somebody give a speech, and he and a colleague of his went, and they heard the speech, and the colleague asked the president, "What did you think of the speech?" And President Lincoln said, well, it was well delivered, it was well prepared, but it wasn't a great speech. And the president's friend said, why do you say that? Because he didn't ask the audience to do anything great.
Interesting.
And, you know, you have, because you're on the, right, mm-hmm. on the radio on a continual basis. You have an opportunity every time you have a show to ask your audience to do something great.
Yeah.
Now, something great doesn't have to be what great may mean to you. It can be as little as recognizing somebody who's never been recognized before by saying hello to them instead of them looking down and not looking at anybody and that kind of thing. I mean, it's interesting that little things, opening the door for somebody, you know, somebody like me who's old, you know, open the door.
You're wise,
right?
Wise, not old.
But it's really interesting about humans and their behavior. It doesn't take a lot to be a very positive element in the jungle that you're involved in.
I make it a point to say hello to everybody because I know it can make their day, but do it in a sincere way. You know, I'm at a hotel, you know, I say hi to the housemaid, you know, and I ask her how her day's going. And if she wants to answer me, I'll stop and listen. Yeah, it took me a minute. Maybe I just made her day, right?
but that has great influence on her.
Yeah.
It really does. It's amazing. Yeah. Just absolutely amazing.
I think it was Tony Robbins. I used to listen to all his tapes back in the day, and I think it was him that said, everybody is your superior in some way. And the bum on the street knows something that you don't know, mm-hmm. right? And if you're mm-hmm. you're a talented individual, if you can figure out what that is and help them, right?
I like that. I like that. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. So, Well, Carlos, I think, you know, as you said, you know, you old, I'm gonna say wise, seasoned journey. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you're still extremely active. You look fantastic. You got a spark in your eye. And I have to imagine a lot of that is because of your spirit of gratitude and giving back. You know, I talked to a doctor friend of mine, and he's a very holistic doctor, and he tries to work more on prevention instead of fixing people after. And I said, he calls himself Dr. James. I said, Dr. James, what is the number one, you know, quote unquote, secret for good health? And right away, service to others. I was like, really? Not sleep, water, exercise, mm-hmm. diet? Nope. Service to others. He goes, you live a life of service, everything else will fall into place. And I was like, wow, I didn't see that coming. I kind of do it naturally, which is just my makeup, so I'm glad I kind of get it. But if everyone else, to your point, can realize that that's really important for your own health. So in quote-unquote selfish way, you're benefiting too, right?
That's right. Yeah, it's interesting. I just read a book about what you just said, and it's called The Serving Leader. And it talks about that you're really important to set an example to help your associates, your people, your friends, your family, that's really what you're supposed to do. It isn't all about you as an individual. It's more about those around you, that you should be serving in some way or helping in some way. And yep. Just exactly what you're doing and what you talked about.
Yeah, call it karma. I call it, you know, God is going to reward me for the good things I do, and he's going to give me a swift little kick in the butt for the bad things I do, right?
Hopefully it's not too tough of a kick.
It's not too awful. I try to be pretty good.
Good, you know? Good.
I signed up to be an usher at St. Patrick's Church in Victor. So I figure, you know, being, you know, quote unquote signed up, it obligates me to go to church. So it at least once a week, I'm getting everything aligned, you know, setting up a rhythm, right?
So, no, that's good. That's good.
Yeah. So so Carlos, that's you know, here on this radio show, once and for all, let's document your journey of employment throughout the years here in Rochester. I think, you know, we talked about Central Trust. Where did it begin here in Rochester for you?
Well, my work actually began in Buffalo. I worked out of school. I went to work for a company called Ashland Oil and Refining Company, a large integrated oil company headquartered in Ashland, Kentucky. And I worked part-time for them when I was going to school, and when I served some duty, active duty in the Army, I came back, and they had to give me my job back. So I ended up working in their accounting department. From there, I went into the management program. From there, I went into sales and so on and so forth. And I was there. And then I ended up running their home heating division in Western New York. At that time, oil was a real prominent product for the use of heating. And we had about 50,000 customers in all of Western New York. And I think I learned my fundamentals from that. They had an interesting model. All of the units, like the home heating division, acted as a distributor. We used to buy product from the refinery, and we then had responsibility for selling it, maintaining it, and all of the other things that surrounded the home heating business, like oil furnaces and tanks and installation and billing and all those kinds of things. So essentially, I had a little company, right, that they owned, but I managed, and learned their philosophy of management, their philosophy of trying to create family atmospheres in the company. The founder of the company was a man like that, that everything was about the family, and they had They had tremendous parties at Christmas and that kind of thing for
employees.
It was unique
back then, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. They would have acts, circus acts come in to Kleinhans Music Hall in Buffalo. It was just unbelievable company.
Leading the workplace culture movement, huh?
Yeah, and it was all about you're only as good as your people. Mm. And if you don't hire the right people with the right skills, but even more important, the right heart, the right value system, the right culture, you're not going to do very well. This is not about you. It's about how do you gather around you the right people.
Once again, getting back to being a servant, right?
Right, and how do you help them, make them better, make them able to do things they don't believe they would ever be able to do. And
because your employees are never going to treat your customers better than the management treats the employees, right?
So I learned a lot from them. We had unions that used to drive our vehicles and service our units and that kind of thing. So I got that experience as well. Then they wanted me to move, David, and I wasn't sure I wanted to move.
Where? Do you remember where?
Well, it was back to their home office in Kentucky.
Oh, my God.
As far as I remember. Mm-hmm. And I was like this, and my wife actually was disappointed that I ended up turning them down.
Oh, wow.
Because it was such a great company, and they were so good to us and all of those kinds of things. But I don't know, there's something about it. You move to a one company town, and you live next door to your boss, and the people who work with you live on the other side of the street. Everybody belongs to the same clubs, that kind of thing.
Right.
If you don't have anything to do on Sunday, you go to work, right? You do something. I mean, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I was talking to a fellow from M&T Bank in Buffalo who, because I was a customer of theirs, and he asked me what I was going to do, and I said, I don't know, but I don't think I'm going to accept the offer. He said, why don't you come to work for us? I said, I don't know anything about banking. He said, oh, we don't want you to come in and lend money. We're not going to ask you to do that. But we wanted to bring somebody with a different background into the organization to see, because we're really not good marketers or salespeople and that kind of thing, and we want to see if we can bring somebody in who can have some influence on that. I said, banks don't pay enough. And he said, well, in this case, we're going to make an exception.
I'll make it happen for you.
So I ended up going to work for M&T Bank. And I worked for them for about 8 years. And they then were having some difficulty. But in that job, I ran their real estate department, which meant I had to be responsible for the generation of new offices and that kind of thing. And that was when banks were expanding like crazy. We moved many of our employees out to Sylvania plant out on Cayuga Road, if you know where that is. And we had to set up a new security system. It was the days when there were bombings in the banks and that kind of thing, so I had to get involved in the security and how do you do that and all those kinds of things. And eventually I ended up running about 40 of their branches and how do you increase this, you know, things. And I ended up working directly for the CEO for a while.
CEO?
Yeah. But being a sort of an outsider, most of the people who did well in the bank were people who had come in at the entry level and worked their way up. And I came in sort of on top of some of them without that background. And the bank wasn't doing so well. So I decided maybe I'm going to go back into industry. So I was looking. And then somebody called me from who had been a former Federal Reserve officer, and he was working as a consultant for a small bank in Arcade, New York. And he said, they're looking for a new CEO. Would you be interested in being, you know, interviewed?
That's huge. Hey, Carlos, on that awesome big note, we're going to take a quick break, and you'll tell us more about your decision when we get back.
Okay, good.
All right, we are back with the Avanti Entrepreneur Show. I am Dave Mamano, your host. We're moving you forward today with Carlos Carbolata, and he's telling us his story about really his journey as a businessman. Started in Buffalo at a heating and oil company, of all places, and really kind of rose through the ranks as a natural leader. Wanted to move to Kentucky, which was not top on his list at that point. Went to M&T Bank for 7 years, once again rising as a natural leader. And as we talked about before, I'm sensing a lot of that natural leadership has to do with serving others, and which really has been a theme of your life, Carlos. And so now we're at the point where you're at M&T Bank and you're looking for your next adventure, and someone comes along and says, hey, how'd you like to be CEO of this bank?
Yes.
And so tell us about that.
Yeah, the bank was in Arcade, New York, and it was called Citizens Central Bank of Arcade. So I went down and interviewed, which was an interesting process. My final interview with them was at the chairman's office. And when I walked in, there was a circle of chairs and one in the middle. I'm being quick on the take. I realized that the one in the middle was for me. So I sat down. They gave me a cup of coffee, and I sat there waiting for people to start asking me questions. And at that time, they had about 12 directors, and they didn't say anything. So I said, well, maybe I should tell you about me.
Right.
And I started from the time I was born and started leading them through the process.
Yep.
And that was a very interesting session. Anyway, I left, and I got home, and my wife said, well, how did it go? I said, they're going to offer me the job. I said, how do you know that? I just know they're going to offer me the job.
I had a good feeling.
The next day, the chairman called me and said, I want you to know that we voted you president and CEO of the bank yesterday afternoon at our board meeting. I said, Anson, unfortunately, I haven't decided whether I want to go to work for you. He said, well, what do you mean? I said, well, first of all, you haven't talked about what the job pays, what the benefits are, what else goes with it, what your expectations really are, and so on and so forth. The bank was having some difficulty at that time. And so he said, oh, you got to come down to the bank right away. We got to get this resolved. I said, I can't. I'm still working for M&T Bank, and I told you I would not meet on their time.
Called integrity, right?
Right? So, well, when can we meet? I said, well, I'm available on Saturday if you want to gather your directors, and I'd be glad to come down on Saturday. So that's what happened. There was also complications with that, David.
Yeah.
What had happened, they had interviewed somebody else who, if I said no, they were going to offer the job to.
Mm-hmm.
And when they said, okay, we got a job, when I went back and we talked about the various elements, they said, do we have a deal yet? I said, no, I've got to talk to my family one more time before I say yes. So I messed up their plan, because they were going to talk to this other individual on Sunday. And I said, I'll let you know Monday morning. Right? No, I didn't know any of that.
Right.
So anyway, as it turned out, I eventually had dinner or lunch with this fellow who happened to be from Marine Midland. And I said to him, I'm sorry. I know that the directors offered you the second in command of the bank. I said, that's a no-no.
Yeah.
I said, I don't want somebody sitting next to me who's hoping I don't make it so right. that they can be
yeah, like
the next CEO, right?
A little banana peel on the ice for
right,
you.
Right, right, right. So anyway, we got through some of that. But it was a wonderful experience for me and the family, very small community.
Mm-hmm. Is that Citizens Bank as we know it today?
It's a division. It became a division of Central Trust Company.
Okay, all right.
That's what happened. Central bought Citizens Central, and as a result of that merger, I moved to Rochester.
That's how you got to Rochester.
Yes,
to be president of Central Trust.
Right, that's correct.
Yeah. So we got about 10 minutes left. So tell us, and that's when Rochester got to know you.
Right.
With Central Trust,
right.
How long was that? How long were you president of that bank for?
Let's see. I came in 1982, and I believe the Bank of New York bought Central Trust Company in 1992.
Okay, so 10 years.
And right after that, I went to work for First National Bank of Rochester.
Okay.
Now, the interesting thing, you know, everybody... is very always very nice, as you are, David, and say how wonderful Carvalhada is and all this kind of thing.
It's true. It's
but,
true.
but the banks that I went to, even M&T Bank, because some of the units I was involved in with there, the bank wasn't doing very well. And one of the things that I think almost every appointment I've had or had an opportunity to get, there was some kind of problem. And what I've found is the ability to take something that isn't doing very well and improve it is much easier than taking something that is doing very well and maintain it.
Yeah.
Because in the first example, you move something 10%, everybody starts thinking
he's
you're
a genius. Right?
That's right. No, I'm serious. That's absolutely right.
Yeah.
And I think this was the way God's saying
right.
I can only put you in things that aren't doing very well because I can't put you into these.
Right. sometimes when you're on top, where are you going to go?
Well, that's absolutely right. That's absolutely right. But
and then you're to blame, and it could be external factors, yeah. Right?
So I've, you know, all of that has been wonderful. My wife talked me into going to work for Bob Duffy. I
yep.
told him no.
Oh my God!
When he first asked me,
you're like that.
But yeah. she knows me better than I know myself. Like you,
yeah,
right,
yeah.
You made your condition of marriage.
Yeah, I told my wife.
Right?
I said we were talking before the show that I told my wife. I said if we want to get married. You need to know I love working, and I'm probably never going to retire. And if that's a problem, then you know you might have to rethink marrying me. And she was okay with it because there's worse habits, right?
So. Well, that's right. Well, when Bob Duffy asked me if I'd go to work for him, I was essentially retired at that moment. And when I talked to Virginia about it, she said, don't you think you ought to really go and see if you can help them?
Mm-hmm.
I said, yeah, but you and I have talked about we're going to do more traveling, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, and now you're telling me. She said, but I can tell you're not going to be happy just sitting around.
Were still turning, right?
And then neither of us are going to be happy.
She's like, get out of the house.
Yeah,
right?
So she knows me better than than I know myself.
You're not a guy to watch Oprah. You know, I mean, you want to be out and about, right? So.
I need that. You know, I need to be busy. I need to have people like you still say hello to me as I pass by.
Right.
Kind of thing. So.
Sure. Yeah. So we got a few more minutes here. So you got involved with Bob Duffy, and then you eventually became acting mayor, which
correct.
Is kind of a cool. So you're you've been mayor of Rochester without having to run for office,
right.
Maybe the only one, right? so tell us how that happened, if you don't mind.
Well, Tom was appointed acting mayor when Bob Duffy became the lieutenant governor.
Mm-hmm.
In investigating the legality of could Tom run for elected office, the Hatch Act, which is a federal law, seems to say that if you are a sitting acting, you can't run in a general election for that position, which put Tom in the position of either saying, forget it, or I'm going to resign and run as, you know.
Why am I spacing Tom's last name?
Tom Richards.
Tom Richards, yeah. So Tom, he was...
Two first names.
That's right, that's right.
and I should say a great guy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people often ask me what the difference is between Mayor Duffy and Mayor Richards and Mayor Warren. And there are differences, you know, in how they view things, and but we're all like that. But the one real constant, and I'm proud of this, is that all three of them, the real burning issue was, how do we help the citizens be better?
They all have that in common.
Yes.
Yeah, that's great.
The number one priority.
Serving others.
Yes, that's
so,
right.
So it's not about themselves. Yeah, you know, and I have to say, you know, Mayor Lovely Warren, she silenced a lot of her critics because I think, to your point, she has reached out to people saying, I need help. I want to serve our community. I can't do it all alone. Reaching back out to you. You know, when her administration came in, as typical, the previous administration kind of packs and leaves, mm-hmm. but she asked you to come back.
Mm-hmm.
Which you were a little surprised there, right? Because that's not typical.
I was, but she, unusual circumstances. Len Reedon, a great deputy mayor, great guy, very sick physically. It was very difficult for him to even come into the office. And, you know, it was a little desperation there. And she called me and asked me, and I said, no, you know. And
you always say no.
Then
you always play hard to get, then they want you more.
some of the other acquaintances called me and said, you got to help her. And they were right. My wife said the same thing. So I told her I'd go back and I'd do it for a couple of months till she found somebody else.
Interim.
Well, you know what happens then.
A couple of months, a couple of years.
Or... A year.
It was a year.
It was a year.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah. See, at least with me, she didn't have to. I didn't have to learn City Hall. I didn't have to learn the people and where right. their authority was and what they did and that kind of thing. So it was an easy transition for me.
Right.
And I'm glad I did it.
Have you, I would imagine through the years people suggested that you run for office. Have you ever thought about that?
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that, David, because when I was in Arcade, my plan was to work until I was 55 and then run for the congressional seat down there.
Mm-hmm.
But that didn't work because I ended up here instead. I was asked once to run for the county executive's office. When, let's see, he just passed away.
Oh, Lucien Martin? Or
no.
No? Tom Fry?
Tom Fry.
Yeah. Yep.
Tom Fry.
Yeah.
They ended up with Tom Fry as the
okay.
Canada.
Yeah, yeah. And, but, and he did the airport. That's his claim to fame, right? So.
Yeah. But, but the problem with political office, I mean, particularly if you're doing reasonably well in your profession or the company you're working for, I mean, you have to take a huge downsize. You got to downsize. You got to sell your house, get a smaller one, and all that kind of thing because you can't afford what you have.
Truly, truly serving others.
That's right. That's a real sacrifice.
So you better be independently wealthy, right?
The only elected office I've ever held was the regent's position, because that's a position elected by the joint session of the legislature.
Carlos, you know what? I think we touched on the tip of the iceberg with you. I think there's so much more we could talk about, but we are out of time, believe it or not.
Wow.
So I feel like we have to have you on the show again and keep on digging into Carlos Garbalata. So.
Well, thanks,
Dave. But thank you. You've been a great Rochester institution. So glad we got you here. I'll thank Central Trust for buying that Citizens Bank of Arcade and bringing you here. You've truly become a Rochesterian through and through, and glad you're still very involved in the community, doing great things. If people, want to reach out to you just to get in touch, learn more, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
Well, to call me at my office. My number is 428-7415. Of course, the area code is
585-428-7415.
Well, and if I'm sitting at my desk, I will answer the phone.
You'll actually pick it up.
Yes, I will.
Who does it anymore? Excellent. Well, Carlos, thank you very much. Carlos Garbalata from so many things, most recently Deputy Mayor, Central Trust, M&T Bank, Acting Mayor, so many great things. So, Carlos, thank you so much. Really appreciate your commitment and servitude to Rochester, New York, and we'll have you back on the show at some point.
Great, David. It's been my pleasure.
Thank you very much. And we have to go, Avanti listeners. Thank you for listening. Last but not least, if someone you know would like to be considered to be on the show, please throw me an email at david@davidmamano.com. And Mamano is spelled M-A-M-M-A-N-O. Make sure to check us out on the web at davidmamano.com. And or AvantiEntrepreneurGroup.com. Thank you so much. Make it a great day and stay awesome.